You are now listening to Bullhook Golf, an unfiltered golf podcast taking you inside the ropes with unfiltered stories, insights, analysis, and exclusive interviews. Welcome back, everybody, to Bullhook Golf, the podcast. This is the show of the year. I've been telling my wife all night long, I'm like, honey, this is the biggest show we got all year long. It is Ryder Cup week. We've got nothing bigger than this. So without further ado, man, my name is Matt Cook. This is Bobby Brown. This is our Ryder Cup preview show. I think, Bobby, you might be on mute right now, buddy. You might just need to click that thing. I'm just seeing it. There you are. Bobby Brown is here, everybody. So, Bobby, welcome.
I was taken away with that big time fancy.
You know, it's our first time doing the full like 10-minute countdown. So I wasn't quite sure how that was all going to pan out, but it actually turned out quite well.
I love your green room.
Your green room is great. Look at that hat. Got the Bullhook gray hat going on. But everybody, we've got the Ryder Cup special show tonight. I mean, there's nothing else to really talk about here. There's nothing else relevant right now. Everything in the world has completely stopped. It is Ryder Cup week, and this is the show. If you want to get some inside stories, some inside scoops, and you know, some stuff that probably won't make it onto the podcast tomorrow, then this is definitely for you. You definitely want to be watching this one. But without further ado, before we do jump in to the show and get started, I do have to say, everybody, Swannies.co. I mean, the birdie juice, it is flowing. So cheers, Bobby, to you. I got the birdie juice going. This is the Swannies birdie juice hat. This is the Swannies sweatshirt. My goodness, I feel like a million bucks right now. I might not look it, but I feel it. So, I flipped that around. I might look like a million bucks. I might not feel like a million bucks. I'm still recovering. Yeah, still in recovery mode. Gotcha. But Swannies.co, listeners get 25% off their entire order by using Bullhook Golf 25 at checkout as their promo code. 25% off the entire order. It doesn't get much better than that, Bobby. Whoo! You ready to get going?
Matt, are you excited?
I'm so pumped. You seem excited. This is literally one of my favorite times of the year, every 2 years. So we don't get it every year. You know what I mean? So it's even that bigger of a deal. So let's start our very first segment of the Ryder Cup preview show with breaking down the teams, Bobby, because there's some drama around the teams that have led into this. We alluded to it on a couple episodes ago. We're going to be talking about it now. But first of all, Team USA. Team USA has not won on international soil since 1993.
My math says 30 years on that. 30 years. I think that I was involved in the closest one that we came to was in Wales in 2010, when it was 14.5 points to 13.5 points. And we made that furious charge in singles on Sunday late to the last, it basically went to the last match, the GMAC Hunter Mahan match. And, man, that's the closest we came. That home team advantage thing, it's real. It's super real. You know, there's going to be 50,000 people out there, and I'm sure 45,000 of them are going to be around the first tee. So that's a lot to overcome. I mean, obviously we proved that last year. I mean, we drilled them. It was not last year, 2 years ago, excuse me. We absolutely drilled them like they'd never been hurt before, 19-9 at Whistling
Straits. That was just a straight beatdown.
Complete beat. Just a thanks for coming, boys. Why'd you stay till Sunday? We could have done this all Saturday and really got after it. But, you know, I don't think we're going to see anything close to that this year at all. You know, it's a photo finish. It's going to be a photo finish, I think. I really do think it's going to be a photo finish. And honestly, I look forward to come down to the last match. And a Ryder Cup should come down to the last match. I mean, you know, guys in team rooms won't say that, but for us, you know, the spectators and the fans and the people that really, really love, you know, waking up at 1:30 in the morning, us sickos love it. And we wanted to see, you know, we wanted to kind of end like the Solheim Cup ended. I would take that 14-14. We retain the cup. That would be a moral victory. I am sure there was a lot of talk after the Solheim Cup about this whole tie thing possibly going away and send them out for penalty kicks or what have you, whatever they decide to do. But I think that that's something that they're going to address after Sunday, honestly, to tell you the truth. So
what were your thoughts, team, Bobby, on Wyndham, you know, Clark's comments? Because I absolutely loved them. I loved it.
I think the Monday Q info guy said it best. He says 120 guys tee it up on the range every Monday to qualify. Only four times has a Monday qualifier ever won a PGA Tour event. But you don't think that every single one of those guys that tee it up of the 120 think that they're better than everybody else and they can win that PGA Tour event? What other kind of mindset? Do you want him to say, oh, I'm a rookie and I'm going to just try and feel my way and get through that first tee shot?
Here, I'm going to read the comments from Wyndham Clark. This was from his first interview on the Golf Channel. I have the utmost respect for Rory. I'll start again. I have the utmost respect for Rory. He is one of our great ambassadors of our game. He is obviously one of the best of all time, and he is still going, so he can be that. I have a ton of respect for Rory, and because of that respect, I also want to beat him. I like to think I am better than him, and I want to prove that. There's nothing wrong with that. I feel like the European media, especially, because he's had follow-up interviews since then with like Sky Sports and so forth.
Yeah.
And he's had to justify those comments. But I absolutely love it. You have to think you're the best out there. You're the best in the world at what you're doing. And you can't really think any other way.
Listen, I mean, Wyndham Clark is officially transitioning into that kind of elite player. So, and that is the mindset that I've found over the last 17 years or so that you have to compete at that top 10, top 15, top 20 level. You have to have that mindset that you are better than everybody else. And you work out at the same gym. So, you know, what a lot of people don't know is how dedicated to his craft he is and how hard he works. And I think a couple of the coaches went on record already saying they've never seen anybody work as hard as Wyndham Clark works. So my hat's off, little tip for him, because you got to go in there. And it's no surprise that the European media would stir that up, because this Ryder Cup is all about stirring up
100%.
You know what I mean? And trying to get under somebody's it's just a whole nother level. You know, they're trying to get under somebody's skin and that possibly could be part of the home field advantage thing too. When they start
just to touch on
like
what you were talking about with Wyndham Clark being a hard worker. Yeah. 2 days after he wins the U.S. Open, he's back in the gym with Ando working out. So just so that if anybody questions what you were just saying there, Bobby, that right there should tell you everything you need to know.
Yep, that's fact. And I look for him to be, there's obviously four rookies on each team, but I look for him to be the rookie that probably needs to make the biggest impact for the American side to be successful and win the cup. And honestly, you know, we can go up and down these, you know, we'll go up and down these teams. Shit, I'll just start.
Let's go down the USA team and break down player by player.
Hey, I'm on a first name basis, so I'm going to call them by their first name or their last name. So everybody pay attention real quick. Patrick Cantlay, Xander, JT, Jordan Spieth, Colin, Scotty Scheffler, Brooks, Ricky Fowler, and then our four rookies, Wyndham, who we are raving about already, Sam Burns, Brian Harman, and Max Homa. It's a pretty good team. Some names missing from the bloodbath in 2021. Bryson, obviously. DJ, obviously. Tony Finau was a part of that team. Harris English was a part of that team. And Daniel Berger is a part of that team. And Daniel Berger has been mending for a long time and hopefully to come back soon. So that's a little difference of our American squad. I mean, they are solid top to bottom. But I will say that I think for the Americans to win, not to tie, but for the Americans to win, I think three guys need to just dominate. And I feel like that's Patrick Cantlay, Xander, and most importantly, I feel like Justin Thomas really has to dominate and do the DJ thing and try and rope himself up. You know,
tall ask, Bobby.
5 points.
That's a tall ask right there.
No, well, it is a tall ask, but we are not in a 72-hole stroke play event, and emotions come and go in a Ryder Cup. And when you catch your wave, so to speak, I've seen it before. I've been standing next to guys that have caught their wave in this deal, and it is you got to ride that wave as long as you can, and that wave can either crash on you. Listen, those matches are waves. There's two or three turning points usually in all of these matches, right? So, you know, I just think I think those three guys are the key, and I'm not disrespecting anybody else, but I think those three guys are the key to us having just a fantastic showing. And I feel like, you know, and then I feel, I don't want to say there's everybody else, because with Justin, with JT comes hand in hand is Jordan, right? Because they're going to play together. Obviously, we know they're going to play together. They were in a pod, you know, one of the pods this morning with Xander and Cantlay, which is a no-brainer too. And, you know, I know Zach Johnson a little bit, and I know he's been doing his research, and, you know, they do a lot of analytical stuff, good putters, tee shots. You know, there's a lot of different things that go into making a great teammate, and being a great friend is, I think, probably the most important one. And those four right there are, I believe, are head over heels above any team that they would play against. Sure. If that makes any sense on Europe. If Sergio was still on the team and Sergio was with John Rahm, I would say that they could go with one of our team. But I think we are head and shoulders. Those four guys are, you know, I think they're better than everybody else. And I really think that they are the key. I mean, Colin Morikawa had a fantastic whistling straight. Sky, which American didn't
That's
have
true.
A good
when you go 19-9.
When you win 19-9. You know, when you go 19-9. And then let's touch on the European team a little bit. You know, Rory, John Rahm, Victor, Terrell Hatton, Fleetwood, Fitz, Justin Rose, Shane Lowry, the rookies, Ludvig Åberg. Everybody's excited to watch him play. Robert McIntyre. I still don't know what I think about that one, but I had to say it. Sepp Straka. Nah, I don't know about that one either. Nikolai Højgaard. Honestly, for a long time, the last year and a half, you thought his twin brother Rasmus was going to be the one that was playing on the team. And we talked about that some episodes. You know, we've been talking about that all year, about these fantastic twins. I actually like that pick. He's a super bomber. You know, when he gets going, he makes a ton of birdies. And this is a different, Matt, this is a much younger transitioning European team than they had in 2019. You remember in 2019, they had Paul Casey, they had Bernd Wiesberger, they had Westwood, Poulter, Sergio. What's my theme here, Matt?
In with the new.
So we're out with the old, the only one out of those five. Now, granted, I will give Poulter credit. You know, he won his singles match, I believe. I believe Westwood won his singles match. But Casey and Wiesberger didn't pop a grade. Sergio, he's always going to get points. And I still think that Sergio could fit, would be playing on this European team had certain things not transpired.
Wow.
So I believe this is a much stronger European team, I believe, top to bottom. 1 through 10, I'm going to say, because I left a couple in there, because I really don't know what I think about McIntyre and Sepp Straka. And I really don't know what, you know, let's not leave out the captains. Luke Donald's obviously captaining the Euros, and our guy Zach is captain of USA. And I just don't know where he's going to fit them in. But I do know this. I can tell you that the Europods – today, you know how they do this new pod thing? It's not a new pod thing. It's a
Daisy. It's not a podcast here, folks. We're talking about the teams, the little groups.
No, we're talking about pods. So they send them out in pods. Everybody starts sending them out in pods for the last 10 or 12 years. So the Europod was Tommy – practice round today was Tommy Fleetwood, Sepp Straka, Shane Lowry, and Rory McIlroy. Another pod was John Rahm, Victor Hovland, Terrell Hatton and Åberg. That's a good pod right there. That's a lot of talent. The last pod was Fitzy, Rose, McIntyre, and Højgaard. Our pods for the Americans were who I mentioned, Spieth and JT, you know, joined at the hip. X and Cantlay joined at the hip. And then in the second pod was Colin Morikawa, Brian Harman, Ricky Fowler, and Max. And then the last pod was Scotty, Brooks Koepka, Wyndham Clark, and Sam Burns. So those are usually a lot of clues on what the pairings are going to be for the first day, for the opening day. And I believe, do you know how the schedule, the format? I think the home coach captain picks if they go foursomes or four balls first. And I believe they're going to go foursomes first, which historically the USA hasn't had the greatest record with. But last year we did. I mean, two years ago we did do very well in that. We did very well in everything. So those are some clues on some pairings.
Bobby, it sounds like as you rambled through both teams. No. I didn't mean it in that way. As you ran through both teams, you seem pretty high on the USA team.
Well, I do, but I want them to win because I'm Americano, you know, and I have been, you know, and I have been involved. I mean, granted, when I was involved was a while ago, and things have changed drastically since then, you know, with new guys in there and new philosophies and new attitudes and new friendships and partnerships and stuff like that. But I'm always going to be pro USA. But I mean, dude, I can make a case for the Euros winning, you know, home. And if they catch a couple waves right off the bat, you know, anything can happen. I can tell you that there is not a guy that's ever played in the Ryder Cup that won't tell you that it's the most nerve-wracking that they've ever been in. It's the pinnacle of their career, and it's the most nerve-wracking that they've ever been in their life, just trying to get a ball airborne at the start. I mean, it is very vocally intimidating, you know, from the moment you start walking up steps or down steps and you know what's coming to you and you know how loud it is. Because let's be honest, you're not warming up in any peace and quiet. You know, you can – they –
Now a quick word from our sponsor. Swannies is here with a fresh take. Performance-based materials are a given these days. But if you're looking for the stretchiest and most lightweight pieces that deliver a look that says, I'm here for a good time, take a walk on the Swannies side. With fabric sourced from recycled plastics and designs sourced from our very own weekend warriors, Swannies is looking out for both our planet and those that need a little style to boost their drive another 15 yards. Premium looks from top to bottom at swannies.co.
The Euros can party, man. They start at like 6 in the morning. They're no scaredy cats, you know? It's like going to one of our football games, a tailgate or something like that. But there's 40 or 50,000. Yeah, what are they doing? Drinking red wine at 6 a.m.? I don't know. What's the big deal over there?
Is it lots of pasta, Bobby.
Yeah, well, I know. Lots of pasta. What goes wine. With the pasta, man? Silver oak. Always has, always will. But, of course, I'm going to be pro USA.
Well, here's it.
I know we're going to get to, you know, points, predictions, and everything that towards the end of the show. But I can see it going either way. And I just wonder when I'm going to sleep. Think, I can't believe we have to wait like 2.5 more days for this whole thing too, or what is it? What is today,
Tuesday,
man? Tuesday? Yes, it's Tuesday. Yeah. So we have to wait, you know, a few days for this whole thing to start. And I can't wait for it to start. I can't watch any more live from the Ryder Cup on TV. I'm ready to go.
Can I just say, it's slightly rough to sit there and watch that for longer than like a half hour. And then they just start repeating stuff over and over again. It is a decent source of getting some information. So I'm not dogging it entirely, but Bobby, I do have a good one for you here. So I saw a post and I want to ask you, who do you think would win if the US players that were left off the Ryder Cup team played 100 matches against the US Ryder Cup team this year? Now get this. You've got Dustin Johnson, you've got Bryson DeChambeau, you got Taylor Gooch, you got Tony Finau, Keegan Bradley, Cam Young, Denny McCarthy, Lucas Glover, Patrick Reed, Sahith Theegala, and I forget what the last two were. I was trying to rack my brain as to the last two, but that's a pretty good squad right there.
The answer is it's easy. It's the team we have now throttles them. They throttle them. Absolutely, they throttle them. We are 1-12 the best American golfers that we have right now. Sorry for saying it, but if you didn't qualify, you didn't qualify. If you didn't get a pick, you didn't get a pick. But this is the team we put up on the board, and they would throttle our other team. I thought you were going to make up a team of guys that got left off of our team against the guys that got left off the European team. And the only.
Oh, no, that would be absolutely horrendous. I mean, that would just be a bad scenario right there.
That would be 26-2 or
a lot of guys not in form.
Like, you know, Adrian Maronk is the only one that really got dissed.
He was the only one.
Maybe, you know, if you threw Rasmus up.
He was the only one on the Euro side, I feel like.
Yeah, he was really the only one that got dissed.
You could make a case for the fact that Sergio not being allowed to be like a assistant captain, as well as who's the other one? Ian Poulter. Those guys would be great as assistant captains. I think they screwed up on that one.
Well, they were going to, well, that's probably all going to be revisited here in the next year or two, I would imagine, right? Because even though they're older guys and that kind of stuff, I mean, those two names that you just mentioned have been the heart and soul of European Ryder Cup for the last six or seven of them. I think Poulter has won six singles matches, so he was always going to be a captain. Obviously, Stenson, you know, we know the whole story there, and Sergio would have been a captain more than once, the sad situation is you get this revolving door of these 40-year-old superstars who are the heart and soul of that locker room and that team room. And now all of a sudden with whatever's transpired, they don't get to really get to pass down their wisdom and experience, so to speak, to the up and coming guys that are being moving in and taking their spots. And that's what those seats are for, you know, those captaincy seats is to spread Wyndham. Now, I will say that two things. I did read today that John Rahm actually has been reaching out to Sergio and Poulter this week via texting and or, you know, phone calls. And not like you would think he would be the one that needs any kind of motivation or any, you know, match play secrets or whatever it is that they're talking about. But, you know, so they are a little bit involved there. And I don't know if this is a news flash to you, but it finally broke a few days ago that Sergio actually contacted Keith Pelley and said, listen, I'll pay the $700,000. I'll do whatever it takes to get back on this team. Did you hear about that one? Yeah. Oh, it was pretty big. You must have been working hard on this. Of ours right here. But Sergio went in and is like, hey, you know, whatever it takes, I'll pay the 700 grand, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, that's, you know, that ship has sailed, so to speak. So he did try to make a last ditch, punch it over the goal line for that and got kiboshed. But my point is I think they need to revisit that because those guys, listen, the whole, you went to live, you know, you knew what was going to happen. It's true. You went to live, you knew what was going to happen. But now that things have moved quite rapidly in the last 6 months or a year, like I said, I feel like this is, there's going to be a way for these guys to end up being captains again. I don't know if it's going to happen in the next one, but I would imagine some years down the line.
I think it'll happen in the next one. I think 2025, because that's most likely when LIV Golf is going to be, I'm not going to come out and just say it, but I am. LIV Golf will be gone in 2025. Yeah. So enjoy 2024 LIV Golf. Okay. And I'm going to enjoy it because I like LIV Golf. But that being said, I have a feeling they're going to go away and those players are going to have an entry way back to the PGA Tour. And then granted, there you go. Ryder Cup.
And I'll just throw this little tidbit out there. With these guys coming back, you know, they're coming back to the raunchiest ass fucking New York crowd at Bethpage Black. Because I don't care if your captains, they are going to take some fucking, they're going to take some shit.
They're going to get fucking destroyed at Bethpage, verbally by the New York crowd. Listen, I'm a New Yorker. I'm from New York City, but I lived in New York City before making my way back out to Arizona. So I know Bethpage way too well, and I know the crowd out there. My New Yorkers, we will absolutely dominate the European crowd. I mean, it's going to be
sink or swim. Sink or swim. You'll see what those captains are made of then. But that would be a fantastic one. There's going to be so much electricity anyways. And if you throw these guys, if you put Sergio, Poulter, Westwood, and Stenson filling captains, you know, seats, that it's just going to be a wild ride. You know, I've been involved in a Ryder Cup, but I would never go and watch one because I know it's so, you know, there's 50,000 people and there'll probably be more at Bethpage Black, I would imagine, because this Marco Simone you know, is super duper hilly. I heard Fred Couples say today in an interview that it reminds him quite a bit of Castle Pines a little bit, you know, with the hills and that kind of stuff. Did you see what Zach Johnson did? I think he's already outsmarted Luke Donald. They got carry bags.
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah, to keep them fresh. God, where can you buy one of those? With the whole team signature on there?
EBay, come on, man. Hit up Joe LaCava. You guys are buddies. What about Bonesy? No. Hit up Bonesy.
I'm the last one. Those guys have been getting ass shit for years. They're my friends. I would be the last one to do something like – I would be the last. Well, granted, I was the one that asked – Joe,
you did. That's why I brought up Joe LaCava at first. I'm like, yeah, you've hit him up before.
So, anyways, Fred says it's super hilly. I heard Joe Greiner, Max's caddy, telling somebody that it's. Have you been to Kapalua? Have you ever played Kapalua before? Okay, so Kapalua is like the nightmare course for all of us to walk, and we have a bunch of shuttles there, right? But I heard him saying that it's worse than Kapalua. So good for Zach to take it easy on the caddies and keep the load light, because, man, I've done, you know, in Wales in 2010, I did back-to-back, you know, they were going to keep playing Dustin and keep playing Dustin in 2010 until he popped through.
Guess what that means, everybody? Poor Bobby Brown had to go back-to-back-to-back too.
Four loops in 2 days. And you know what the bad thing was? If you remember that Wales in 2010, the golf course wasn't even playable, right? It was so wet and they had so much rain. I believe we were I got to check my memory or go to a doctor, but I want to say we were almost lift clean in place across the board out there. And there were literally, there were people sliding down hills, breaking legs, twisting ankles and that kind of stuff. It's like every third or fourth hole, there was some kind of,
so it's almost like the Waste Management Open, but with less alcohol.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But man, I'll tell you that, you know, of all the memories that I've had in golf and all the good and all the lucky stuff that I've been a part of so in 2010, just finding out that your player is on the Ryder Cup and going through the whole, you know, the plane flight, the prep, you know, getting to know all the teammates better, you know, buddying up with the caddies, the team room. How would I express it? I mean, you feel cautiously excited, if that makes sense. You know, you just want to get it going. I can imagine how a player feels, but for me as a caddy, it is by far the most nervous that I've ever been in my life. And honestly, it's not close. I mean, it's just, I personally had trouble sleeping. I could only sleep 3 or 4 hours a night, you know, and I just wanted to get, and
what
I just
makes
wanted
it
to
so
get
nerve
going.
Wracking,
I mean,
that it's for your country.
I wouldn't think if you asked a player that they would 110% say yes. And I think if you asked the caddy, it would be 110% too, just to be involved in something like that. That is so, is so big and so global. And the fact is that not very many people get to be a part That's of true. That, you know, 12 players every 2 years and 12 caddies every 2 years. And you feel like you belong to something special, you know, you feel like you belong to something special. And it was just the greatest memory. I know I drank a lot of red wine that week to like try and take the edge off and everything. And we stayed, you know, both teams stayed at the same hotel on separate floors. And, you know, they just treat you like royalty, literally a bottle of wine in your room or whatever you want at, you know, any cost. And it's just it's just fantastic. As you know, Matt, I'm getting over a little bit of the rehit of a COVID cold or something that I had last 3 or 4 days. So excuse me.
I'm a little nasally right now, too, Bobby. I'm getting over a bit of a cold. Yeah,
it's awesome. And so, you know, he turned around and he made the next team. And, you know, this is back when Phil was such an important part of the Ryder Cup. And Phil, you know, immediately adopted Dustin like Phil likes to do in these young Ryder Cup things earlier in the year when he knew that Dustin was going to make the team. That was quite obvious that we were dealing with a generational talent. There, I said it. And, you know, we played all our matches with Phil. And the hardest thing for me to do, caddying in that, besides not fall on my face or anything because it was so slippery, was to you know, Phil is a very controlling guy with the young guys during the Ryder Cup. I don't know if I spoke about this on other episodes before, but, you know, Phil wants to call all the shots for Dustin. You know, it's a big thing. These pods early in the week, you know, with these new guys and that kind of stuff, you really got to decide who, what tees you're going to play, who's going to putt on the par threes, blah, 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 blah. A big thing that nobody thinks about too is the whole golf ball thing too, right? In a four ball, it's no big deal. But in foursomes with your partner, you got to decide which golf ball you're going to use. And is it for the tee shots? Is it for the iron shots? Who's going to have the bigger choice? You know, Dustin didn't, it didn't really matter to Dustin. He just said, I just won't play, Bob. You know, I just want to play, Phil. Just play your ball or whatever it is. It's no big deal. But I had a hard time, you know, convincing Dustin that, you know, because Phil said it moves 6 feet at speed that's going 4 feet by the hole. Dustin's like, huh? You know what I mean? Dustin is more like, what? What do you say, Bob? Dustin is more of a, you know, field player and that kind of stuff. And it didn't take but 6 holes out there. The very first round, and we were playing, I think we were playing a pretty marquee matchup. We were playing Westwood and Poulter, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, 6 holes into it, Bones comes up to me when Dustin can't, you know, get it within 3 feet of the hole. And he's like, anytime you want me to get Phil out of there, let me know. So we kind of got together, you know, Bones and I, and we decided to let Dustin do his thing. And, you know, Dustin,
so hang on a second. Dustin never messed up. Take a step back real quick. What? So Bones comes up to you, goes, let me know when we want Phil out the way. And basically you tell Bones, right the fuck now, Bones.
What took so long, big fella?
That's priceless.
What took so long? So, you know, there's little things that have to go into that. And that was, you know, the pre-paw days with Azinger and that kind of stuff. And, you know, and I have told you this before, I haven't been, fortunately I've been involved, but unfortunately I haven't been involved recently.
How many Ryder Cups have you been at?
You know, would you believe 1.5? Okay. Got it. And I'll explain myself. So 2010 is Wales I'm talking about. 2012, he has an unbelievable year, and we're going to Medina. And the Ryder Cup is the week after the Tour Championship. And remember, I told you the story Friday morning. I woke up at the Tour Championship, Dustin in contention. I went to put on a pair of socks, reached over the end of my bed to grab a pair of socks out of my club and pop. The L4 and the L5 just went, and I made it 9 holes on Friday, and Dustin booted me. And you know, and I was, you know, I've explained what that's like. You can't go to the bathroom. You can't get comfortable. You're in so much pain. There's nobody that can fix anything but a specialist. But yet it's the Ryder Cup the next week. So you're on a private flight for 3 hours to Chicago. And
have you ever been kicked in the tailbone before? This was like, this is a weird thing that like happened when I was young. It like ran through my school in upstate New York to where kids were kicking each other in the tailbone, which is completely ridiculous, but you couldn't sit down. You couldn't, like, laying down in bed even hurt. So I have to imagine that it's got to be a little bit similar, but at least with the tailbone getting kicked and it gets bruised, that it doesn't last that long, where like it lasts maybe a day or two, but like the back injury you're talking about sounds awfully familiar.
It's terrible. I mean, it's the same thing that Zalatoris that took him down. So, you know, I've had my experience with that. So, you know, I'm on that long plane flight. We get there at midnight to the team hotel, and they have a chiropractor that I'm going to see at 1 a.m. And I felt like he jacked me up even more. And I basically did not get out of my bed for 5 days of the Ryder Cup. So Davis Love was our captain. I know it was terrible. Davis Love was our captain. Jeff Weber was his caddy at the time. And, you know, the captains bring their caddies because they're the caddy captain. They're in charge of anything that needs to be done. Who's in charge of the sandwiches? Who wants to run back and they get this and bring
it
out?
Wait a second. So the captains have their caddies there?
Yes. And they are the caddy captains.
That's fantastic information. I never knew that.
Yeah, there you go. Nobody cares, but it's true. So Jeff Weber ended up caddying for Dustin, and obviously that was the miracle of Medina when the Euros.
It's because
made
you weren't there. I get
back
it
on Sunday. And, well, yeah, but I was in bad shape. It's so funny. Like LaCava and Bones came to my room a couple times, and they're like, you know, and they're like, oh my god, you look terrible, and I'm like, yeah, and they're like, it's the Ryder Cup, you got to go, and I'm like, I can't watch this, and I would try and get out of bed, and they're like, you better not go. you know,
sounds so, like being in Vegas and you're just trying to get that one buddy up out of bed. You're like, you can do it. Motivational speech. Let's go.
I was that guy too. I've been that guy too. So I'm going to say 1.5. Did I get all the gear and everything like that? Yeah. Did I get to enjoy the whole fun? No, I didn't. There wasn't anything enjoyable at, and you know, I get your back never heals from something like that. So I, it's a funny, as soon as it starts hurting again, I always get a constant reminder of the Ryder Cup that I didn't, you know, get to caddy in. For as weird as that is, I feel like I'm scarred from it. And now I work for, you know, international players for the most part. The last
mainly
6 to 8
Koreans,
years,
folks.
So now,
mainly now Koreans Cup, that they Cup. Don't play in the Ryder Cup. It's only the President's Cup. So no, that's what you got to look forward to. Yeah,
only the President's Cup. So, you know, I mean, my experiences were great. Obviously, I don't have any great, you know, memories from 2012 because I
so
was
so you didn't even get to see Michael
time.
Jordan harass and Ian Poulter out there?
Nope. I didn't get to see any of that, man. I was in really bad shape. Thank God Lori was there and she took care of me. And I'm pretty sure that's where we conceived our 10
year old. Wow. How about that?
110% sure. So, well, yeah, I didn't have to.
That's
do
fantastic
dancing.
News.
Go, horsey, go.
We're not even to the unfiltered stories from Bobby yet.
No, I got to cut some unfiltered stuff. The stuff I know, I got to cut, man. I got to cut some of it.
We're not there yet. We're still on story time with Bobby here. And let me ask you, I mean, what is your fondest Ryder Cup moment of caddying in the Ryder Cup?
Well, I mean, it would be the whole day on Sunday when Dustin dismantled Keimer. I think he beat him 6-5, but Dustin just whooped his ass, and you could tell Dustin didn't get any points. They were jockeying him around between Mickelson. They tried to put him with Furyk in a pairing, and that didn't go over too good.
DJ and Furyk just does not seem like a combo to me.
Yeah, but that was. Listen, I mean, I was trying to explain. I cut myself off, but I was trying to explain to you the locker room that I was involved in 2010 was Jim Furyk would come in, he would go his way. Tiger would come in, he would go his way. Stuart Sink would come in, he would go his way. You know, there was nothing, it wasn't that cohesive, so to speak. You know, Phil was always very verbally motivating and that kind of stuff, but Hunter Mahan was a very quiet guy, kept to himself. You know, it was just very different than what it seems like with these young guys who are all buddies, who all kind of seem to live around each other and see each other and play with each other all the time. So they've developed these wonderful relationships. It's been a huge advantage swinging into this event. But that day in my golf life and my caddy life, I'll never forget because of the thrashing that Dustin put on Keimer, you know. And Keimer had a chick, I don't want to hurt your feelings with this, had this chick he was dating from ASU who was out there. So friends and so family members are
so
allowed
to
come.
She had blonde
ropes,
hair,
right? But the
boot, and she was very attractive.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was cute. Yeah. And she was cute, but she was annoying as shit. So anyways, I'm going to tell you that family members are supposed to, they can come inside the ropes, right? But they have to stay within what is one arm's length of the ropes, right? There's no getting close to the players or any talking or anything like that. So it didn't take but the second or third hole in the match. And I noticed that Keimer's, and that's what I called her to the official, Keimer's bitch was on my tail, was walking off the tee, like standing on the tee boxes with us and on my tail and walking down the middle of the fairways. And she's close to us when we're talking about what we're going to hit. And then she's close to Martin. And you know, finally, after four or five holes, I said something to Dustin. I go, what is this bitch doing right here? And he's like, Bob, what bitch is that? And you know, he kind of looks at her and he goes, Bob, get her out of here. So our walking official, I think, well, he's since passed away, was John Paramore. He was like the lead
rest
European
in peace,
tour
John
official.
Paramore.
And rest in peace. And, you know, I said to John, I go, John, this bitch, it's been walking next to us the whole time and it's starting to annoy Dustin. And he's like, turns around and he's like, who's, and Keimer's like, oh, that's her. And they went over and talked to her and that kind of stuff. And it's so funny, but I felt like she was staring Dustin and I down the whole time. Like I would like look over and I felt like she was flipping us off every once in a while. So it made it even more special that Dustin just thrashed him. But, you know, I must tell you that about 30 minutes after that, you know, once all the family members and congratulations and we were getting all the the momentum, the Americans was, I went out to watch, you know, as a team, you go out and you watch the other players play, especially on Sundays, you know, to get them, especially when you're making a run and you're rallying and you look like you might pull off a major upset here. But I think I got to 15 or 16 and I was looking for the team and I'm walking down the hill and, you know, this dude taps me on the back and it's Tiger, you know? So I got to watch the last three holes with Tiger, with Hunter Mahan putting this unbelievable fight on to get back into contention. Ricky Fowler in front of him, I believe he was having a match or came back and won a match against one of the Molinari. So I have a special memory of spending like three holes with Tiger and throwing fist pumps and high fives. And honestly, you know, it wasn't, oh my God, it's Tiger Woods and that kind of stuff. I think I was taken by the passion that he had, that he wanted to win this thing so bad that it was like, you know, this is Tiger Woods, all these majors and that kind of stuff. And you just be like, oh, the Ryder Cup's the Ryder Cup. But to see how he was all in on something like that was just something.
Well, you hit on something really interesting because it used to be the entire conversation about how Americans, we were the most talented. We had the best players, but yet it was all individuals.
Yeah.
That has kind of flipped.
Yeah.
And like you said, now you got a lot of people that are like best friends.
It's flipped.
I mean.
Yes, it's flipped. It's flipped. I mean, think about this. Xander's moving down to West Palm, right? So you have Cantley down there, Jupiter. Xander's moving down there. Justin's there. Spieth is there. Kepka's there. Ricky's
Wait,
there.
Wait, Spieth's down there now? Spieth's in Dallas.
No, excuse me. Spieth's not there. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was a bogey. that was a bogey.
That
right
friends
there.
Is a pull there. Hook.
But there's half. Yeah, that's a pull hook. And no, you can't control
those are left and left.
We know that. And, you know, that's half of our team right there that sees each other, you know, I wouldn't say on a daily basis, but, you know, when they're playing golf, they usually don't go out and play by themselves. Let's put it that way. So that's, you know, I had great memories from that. Obviously, it was a heartbreaking loss. You know, we were in a position to get it done. And, you know, Hunter Mahan stubbed that chip and it came back at his feet. And it was just.
That
you know,
might be the most devastating shot I've ever seen in a Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
And it ruined the rest of his career.
Well, listen, it did ruin the rest of his career because he was so good for so long, but that was always his Achilles heel, right? And I'll tell you another thing that I feel like's changed too. Like Tom Lehman was one of our assistant coaches. And, you know, I'm not knocking on Tom Lehman at all because he's a family friend. And I'm just going to tell you that I remember him saying something like, oh, I wouldn't have played him in this match or that match. You know what I mean? That was just like, that's something that you really didn't need to hear at that point. And I think we're way past that. Himself into the ground with practicing, like he couldn't sleep either. It's like it's 5 a.m. He's like, Bob, let's go get a coffee, bro. I want to go.
Was it a
you
coffee?
Know, we're not meeting downstairs. And yeah, it was a coffee. Yeah, it was 2010. It's in was Wales. It? There's no proving bang bang rolling around there. I mean, that stage of the game. So, and I know, and it was early in the week, but you know, he's just hitting balls and hitting balls and hitting balls, and he wasn't happy with his. And they actually had the TaylorMade truck and a Titleist truck there, and he wasn't happy with his drive for some reason. So it's like 5 p.m. on Thursday, and we're going to go out one of the early groups on Friday, right? And he's like, Paul, let's go back down the range. Let's go back down to the range. You know, Butch was there too. And he's like, Bob, let's go down the range. I said, I want to hit a couple more drivers. And me and Butch are like, fuck, we're not going to the range, man. You've done enough. You need to get some rest. He's like, just a couple, right? Second swing, he cracks his driver. TaylorMade truck is gone. Tom Lehman gets a hold of the TaylorMade truck. They're 4 hours away. They get back at 9 o'clock at night. They bring up a handful of drivers for Justin, and I think he's second group out. So that didn't help. And Corey Pavin was our coach at that time, and he's a great guy, and I got along with him really good, and his wife is just like the life of any party, and I have the best memories hanging out with them. But I do remember that I was so amped up before this match that Corey Pavin actually came over to the putting green. He goes, hey, you got a minute? And he takes me aside and he goes, listen, man, he goes, no fucking around. I need you to be as calm as you have ever been in your life. I'm watching you right now for the last 15 minutes and you need to just fucking chill out. And he said it just like that. And I'm like,
yes, sir.
Yes, sir. And, you know, Phil's, everybody's pro when we're walking to the tee and it's pretty mesmerizing. They're all the players are there and they're coaching on Dustin. Hey, they're going to do this when you take, they're going to do the, when you take the club back and all that kind of stuff. So they were kind of, you know, they were kind of setting him up, and we were going to have Dustin hit the first tee shot, and we were all standing there, and Dustin looks at Phil and goes, Phil, I can't hit this shot, bro. You got to hit this shot. And Phil's like, well, no. More comfortable.
Apparently that first tee shot, I mean, everybody has first tee shot jitters at the beginning of a round, but I can't even imagine what that pressure is like. It probably was like me playing in my first ever varsity golf tournament and topping the first drive. I would probably say that that's probably what I would do right now. If I was out there on the first tee of a Ryder Cup, I'd probably top it.
I don't really have any comment on it. I don't really know if it's in
probably
the same,
not. Probably not at all. I'm just trying to relate to this, okay? And I'm sitting here going, I have nothing that I can attach this to where I would be that nervous other than my first varsity golf tournament to where I topped my first tee shot because I was so damn nervous. I couldn't even feel my hands. And you do hear that from guys on the Ryder Cup that they can't feel their arms, can't feel their hands.
Yeah, everybody will tell. You can't feel shit. You can't feel anything. So just a great experience. And I feel so fortunate to be a part of something like that. It's almost like as a caddy, you're almost like, it's not an I've arrived moment. It's more of a player. Your player has arrived moment, especially a young guy like Dustin. And you're just attached for the ride pretty much. You know, the caddies, you know, the caddies, you get off the plane and there's a bunch of pictures and everything like that. There's just so many little things. And it's so time consuming for all the players. You know, they have to do media, you know, the opening ceremonies, this has to be done at that time. Pictures have to be done at that time. It is a very busy, very hectic weekend. It's a breath of fresh air when you get back to that team room and everybody's just chilling out wearing, you know, this was before shorts, but everybody's just wearing sweats or shorts and that kind of stuff and sharing stories and getting to know each other and having a couple drinks, you know, it was a pretty,
how much drinking goes on throughout the Ryder Cup, Bobby?
You know, as far as teams go and everything
like that,
I think that the Europe.
Is there drinking going on or is it only after the Ryder Cup?
It's only after the, what do you mean? Like the week, like say on a Friday night or something. Yeah, there was, well, in 2010, there was definitely, and I would imagine in 12, there was too. You're not going to stop any caddies from drinking. That's for damn sure.
No, that is a rite of ritual to be a caddy.
Yeah, you have to, you know, I've since cleaned up, but because the game's changed a little bit because you get replaced, you know, there's some seriously good, hardworking caddies out there and they're millionaires. So you got to stay on your toes. But, you know, we were drinking cocktails. None of the players were getting smashed.
Were they having a drink
or
two to take the edge off?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Dustin was having a couple beers at dinner, a couple glasses of wine to take the edge off. That's for sure. I think I read that the year that Paul McGinley won, that somebody came up to Paul McGinley and said, you guys have only been here four nights and you've gone through 161 or 105 nights, 161 bottles of wine or something like that. So I think the Europeans get
Bobby,
after it.
So here's the thing.
What?
Remember the Europeans, there was this secret sauce as to why they kept winning, right? Mm-hmm. It might be the booze. They might just get a little boozed up and then they can't even feel the nerves the next day.
Could be, but let's be honest. The majority of it is what we have in our team locker room now. And that's the whole bonding experience and everybody's friends and nobody's there for themselves. And it took us a long time to figure that out. So, you know, that to me is the biggest thing, to tell you the truth. They already had that thing. You know what I mean? These guys, European tour golfers are traveling together to all these crazy countries all the time, every different week. And you develop relationships and that kind of stuff. And I just think their locker room was much more laid back and cool than our locker room, so to speak, you know. But
what was the wildest thing that you saw? We're getting into the unfiltered stories now, Bobby. What was the wildest thing that you saw during your time in Wales? Because Medina, you were down and out. You had a baby. I mean, that was a different story. Or you made a baby.
That was 2012, yeah. So Wales was made a baby. So Wales 2010, man, he's going to kill me for saying this, but I know he doesn't listen to podcasts because he's 100 years old. But Fluff was in the room next to me, right? And I like cannabis. So Dustin likes cannabis. And it's Wales, it's cold, you know, there's no air conditioning. You got the windows open. You're taking in this great view of this great resort and that kind of stuff. So I'm laying in bed, sucking on a couple of glasses of vino. And I'm like, man, that smells like weed, right? So I walk out to the balcony and I look over to my left and all of a sudden you hear this, hey, Bobby, want some?
It's Flava.
And so it's Fluff. He tosses it over to me, right? So we are, I think we're three stories up or four.
Wait, he tossed a joint
up,
at you?
One of the two. Yeah, he tossed the joint, still burning, over to my balcony. Yeah, come on, I'm an athlete. Wow, I stabbed it in midair, right? So I should be telling this story. So I take, if you know me back then and you know Fluff, that wasn't anything.
I mean, that's
out of
normal
the ordinary,
shit.
And we weren't the only two that enjoyed that on that team. Yeah. So it wasn't very good stuff. I can tell you that much. So we're about four floors up and here comes the whole American team with the wives and they're going to, I don't think it's the grand ceremony. It's a gala or something like that. Right. So we're like, oh, we kind of both take a step back and I got the joint and everything, you know, and I peek my head over the railing and who's the only one to pick us off? Dust. And he looks up and he's like, say some ball. So I tossed it back to Fluff and we both shut our doors and that was all she wrote. But that was probably the weirdest, you know, the weirdest thing. I got to tell you, the Sunday night party is, you know, out of control crazy because the whole exhibition now is over and the winning team always comes over to the losing teams.
See, this is why I can't send you the show notes in advance because you snagged my next question right off of the bat. I'm like, how crazy is the party after the Ryder Cup?
Listen, I got to tell you that it is crazy, but I don't remember a lot of it because I got so effed up immediately after it was over on an empty stomach with numerous bottles of wine that somehow I passed out about 7 o'clock at night and I woke up at 11 with Lance Bennett beating on my door, who was caddying for Cooch, saying that everybody wants to know where you are. Why aren't you at the party? And I said, okay, I'll rally myself up. And I remember just sitting up in my bed and I'm like,
Lance was the rally guy. He was the motivator.
So Lance was the rally guy. I made it down there for about an hour. I was dancing with somebody. This is before Lori. I don't even know who she was. And I remember Jim Fear coming up to me and he goes, you need dance lessons, but let me help you out a little bit. Dancing all is all about confidence. And if you can get these two or three moves down, and now I'm in the corner posted up by Jim Fear.
That's not a good look.
So that would tell you that, no, that's not a good look. He's not. He's a great golfer. He's not like a GQ guy or anything like that, you know? And I do have that memory, but unfortunately I was involved in the 2012 one. I was out of town, but I can't really compare President's Cup parties to Ryder Cup parties, but I kind of can. And, you know, I've been involved in a couple of those where there is a train of Americans going into the bathroom at the same time. And I don't think they're going pee pee or poo poo. And then they're coming out and they're a little bit fidgety and moving very fast. And I'm not going to mention any names, but they're not really on that team anymore. Maybe one of them is. But I think those kind of shenanigans never really happened in 2010 or 2012. I think that was with, you know, whatever it was.
Hang on a second, because I am curious. So obviously there are party favors that are going around at the Ryder Cup afterwards. Uh-huh. Now, are both teams partaking or is it just one? Like, I want to know, do they blend together? Because like, what was it? Because the beatdown was so bad at Whistling Straits, everybody was just blended together, it looked like.
Yeah, and everybody blended together in the near miss in Wales in 2010, and that's really where I can only reference.
A lot of pupils are very big.
You know, they mesh. Everybody meshes fine, and they're talking shit. And you know, I got in a big discussion with Padraig Harrington because Phil and Dustin got beat in a close match. Him and Ross Fisher, and it was funny. It was like Harrington read every putt for Fisher, and I don't care if it was 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 feet, he was burying everything. And we were reliving memories. And I'm like, you are the great, I kept saying it. That's how hammered I was. You are the greatest greens reader God ever put on this earth. And he looked at me and he goes, Ross Fisher is so naive or something like that. He's like, I just was telling him what I thought. And it's just one of those days where he was making everything, but everybody meshes greats. The wife's, mesh great. I mean, the wives, I think, are a little bit, they're a pain in the ass a little bit. And I think it's gotten worse. You know, I think with the influx, well, she's not around anymore, but Paulina and some other ones and that kind of stuff. And they can get a little bit pushy and a little rude to people. And they happen to think it's all about them. And, you know, I was reading something on social media in the last couple of days where some guy was like, why do we have to, the Solheim Cup, they don't parade their dudes or their husbands or boyfriends around or anything like that. But, you know, they're like, some guy was chatting, we need to get rid of this and that kind of stuff. But I will tell you that we had a big rain gear debacle in 2010. Do you remember we had those Harlem Globetrotter looking,
weren't they super rain baggy? Gear
that was made by some people. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I can't go up and show them to you, but man, I still have them packed away in my closet because I told myself, like Keegan Bradley, I'm never opening this bag again until we win. I'm just kidding. But it's funny. We had this debacle and we were all getting soaked after a hole. So they literally, Corey Pavin sent somebody down and they literally went down and bought boxes of Ryder Cup rain gear out of Gore-Tex, out of the merchandise tent that actually had the European Tour logo on one side and the American logo on the other side, which was quite awkward. And honestly, I made out with about eight pieces of each. And that's another thing too. There's some serious swag to go around if you're a caddy at that deal. But I remember having problems with some of the wives because it was so wet. Like they have their own locker room, USA.
You have to rephrase that statement.
What?
The wives and being so wet. Like you have to change that statement right there. That's terrible.
We were soaking wet and the wives were hoarding all the USA towels and nobody wanted to bust into the wife's locker room and get the towels, but me, the big guy. So I did. And I read the Riot Act by, I want to say it was Lisa Sink. I think it was Stuart Sink's wife actually that read me the Riot Act that you need to knock before you come in here and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, we're playing matches out here and it's game day and we need that box of towels there, you know? So there were little tension things like that in 2010. And I don't think those tension things now are around too much. I really can't reference anything, you know, that's happened recent, maybe a 2017 experience on the international team of the President's Cup with Siwoo. And I just telling you, by the international guys, I can see why the Europeans kicked our ass for so long is because the international guys didn't have the talent the Americans had, not even close in 2017, but they sure had the right attitude inside the locker room and the team room. They were loosey goosey. They were out there to try and win. And if it didn't happen, it didn't happen, but they weren't getting too stressed out. There was no tension with the wives or anything like that. Man, I just went on a wife spiel there that was probably didn't even need to be
against the tour wives a little bit.
No, just a few, man. But I will say this, when my time on this earth comes to an end and the big fella, whatever happens, decides to reincarnate me, I would be up for becoming a tour wife because they live the life, bro.
Touche.
They
get a lot of privacy. I feel like, you know, their guy's not around that much.
Yeah,
you know. Sure. Well, sure. Let's get into the Ryder Cup bets. Why not? So, let's go ahead and get started here. I mean, if you want to add in anything, by the way, feel free. So I just had a couple because I went on to FanDuel and I kind of looked at what do we got in terms of some of the spreads and so forth. Do you know that the spread has flipped already to the Europeans? I saw it last night and I almost put a wager in because it was +120 in favor of the Europeans. I mean, it's almost a pick 'em. It is flipped.
Yeah.
So now it's +120 for the Americans and it's +100 for the Europeans. But let's start off. So I'm going to let you have first pick because you lost our live golf bets last week. But most points earned by a player, and I'll let you pick I'll let you start with the USA player.
Justin Thomas.
I love that for you. No, just for you.
You do?
Because.
Okay.
I'm going to go Brooks Koepka.
Okay.
So there's that. Polar opposites there. We got now we got the Europeans, which I get the first pick. I'm going to go with Victor Hovland.
Okay. Ooh, man, that's a good one. That was my pick right there. You know, when you pick those big boys like Rory and Rahm, they pair up against the nuts, right? Against the other big boys, don't they? So I'm going to go with a little bit of a long shot, and I'm going to take
That, actually. I actually like that better, not just for you, but for the overall pick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Next one is going to be the correct score. I'm going to let you go first.
Okay, 14-14, USA retains the cup.
Wow. I am going 15.5 to 13.5 Europeans. Do you want to put a wager on Europe versus America?
No.
So I feel like you want the USA because.
No, I don't want to do that.
I'll take Euro.
I don't want to do
you that. Take USA. Yeah.
Okay, then I'll take USA. Yeah. I'll take USA. Yeah, you made it. There I want to do it. You traded.
No, listen, I my money is still going to go on the USA just because I just want to root for the USA.
Yeah.
But
this is just for fun, and God knows you have a bankroll wadded up.
No, because I actually think that the Euros have the best three players.
Mm. Hovland, Rory, and John.
You got
Rahm. Remember how I was telling you that the USA has to win for these three guys to go: Yahtzee, Xander, Cantlay, and Justin Thomas. Those are my three guys that have to go Yahtzee for the Euros to win. It's all controlled by those three guys right there. Remember, Victor Hovland didn't win a match at Whistling Straits, and Victor Hovland is a little bit better now than he was before. So, and he's been through the old pressure cooker, you know, and he is now on home soil, well, you know, so to speak, home soil, but European soil.
I'm going to tell you right now, Victor Hovland is the best player out there.
Yeah. Yeah, he could be. I'm not going to disagree that. I'm not going to disagree that at all. I could tell you plenty of guys I don't think are the best player, but I would never disagree with that. He's definitely on form. One thing that concerns me about the Americans, let's go down the list. These guys haven't played in 5 weeks, right? Patrick Cantlay, Xander, Jordan, Colin, Scotty Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Sam Burns, Brian Harman, Max Homa. They all haven't played in like 5 weeks. So that's one thing that concerns me, to tell you the truth.
I mean, it is concerning.
Ricky.
But I do think Wyndham is going to be he's going to be the guy that surprises everybody out there because he's got that competitiveness.
Well, I agree. I think he's. Yeah, and he's got passion, right? And I can see him doing some good things out there and getting fired up and having the time of his life. And I can see his caddy, John Ellis, just having the time of his life out there. And, you know, it's just I'm excited to see. Listen, if you told me who other than the big three, we both, you know, called big three on each team. If I had to pick a guy from each team that I'm excited to watch play, it would be Wyndham Clark for the big US of A, and it would be Aberg for the Europeans. Those would be the ones that, you know, I want to,
you know, Aberg really, I don't know.
We'll see. I just want to see. I'm not saying he's going to do great things, but I want to see how he does. You know, I want to see how he does in this situation. If he's unflappable, so to speak.
100 yards an in is not very good.
Okay. Gotcha.
You know that.
Gotcha. Well,
you've seen him play.
Well, I do, but it's not very bad either. But it's not a 4-day stroke play, right? So how many wedges is he going to have? What's the strategy with his partner? You know, who's going to hit this shot? Who's going to hit that shot?
You know where this is going to come down to, you know? These singles.
This is not going to be
one to where it is so like spread heading into singles and you need like a huge comeback to win. It's going to be tight going into singles and then it's going to come down to the singles. You agree?
Yep. Hey, listen, I said it's all about those waves and catching those waves at the right time and doing damage when, you know, and I think, like I said, I think I mentioned my three guys, but I really think that Justin Thomas is the is what he does is going to reflect how the Americans.
After you said last week, you know, and I had to think about this, and up until about 2 hours before we hopped onto the show, that he was not in form. Then I saw the tweet from Colt Nost that tagged Justin Thomas in it. That goes, Justin Thomas is not in form. And I'm like, God, that's a hard thing to like tag Justin Thomas in, because you know he's going to see it. Like, at least his people are going to see it. And it's just that's a tough one to me. And the driver is where he's struggling a bit, right?
Well, I mean, I saw, and I told you that Sunday in Napa, that's his big problem. He's not that sharp, you know, but that was a, that
was,
this
is a golfer's track or a driver's track, Bobby.
Listen, I know I've done the research. There's a first cut, there's a second cut, there's a third cut, there's a fourth cut, then there's death, you know? So I know how they trick these courses up to play into the European, into the Europeans' hands. And, you know, I'm just going to tell you, I put a lot of stock in the fact that this format is so much different than what we do 40 other weeks out of the year, right? And that he is, you know, you almost look at him as like the motivational leader.
Oh, if he plays well, team, you know, and he starts hot early.
He's like 6-3-1. He's 6-3-1.
The guys will
get
behind
him.
Well, here's my little piece that coming from an it's not unfiltered, but it is an insight that I don't even know if I shared with you yet, Bobby. But
okay, tell me.
There was a minority, because Zach Johnson asked the guys who they wanted on the team. And apparently, Wyndham voted for Keegan. And he was Keegan. Did I say it off air with you? Because I don't think.
No, you said it on the air. No, you said it on the air.
All right. Well, we're towards the end of an episode, and I'm towards the end of a Bushwood Spirit. So.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm not but I'm not surprised. How would you, you know, how could you not want Keegan on that team? You know, I would take Keegan on that team over. I wouldn't take him over JT, so I'll just say that. But I would take him on that team over, and I don't want to hurt any feelings, but I'd take him on that team over Sam Burns. I think I would, to tell you the truth, you know. Max Homa is an automatic qualifier, but I can see Keegan fitting on that team.
Sam Burns is an enigma to me. I don't know who he is. Well, like,
listen, I'm going off of that President's Cup too, where Scottie Scheffler and Sam Burns got shelled. Right. Scottie Scheffler has been a great match player through junior golf and obviously the match play and that kind of stuff. But, you know, I just, you know, they got shelled at the President's Cup. They couldn't do any good. They couldn't do any good together. And I feel like Sam Burns is Scottie's tag along in this event. You know, I really feel like
that. Sam Burns won the WGC, right? The match play.
Yeah, he did. But
he shows signs of brilliance and then just disappears. And then you never hear from him again. Yeah, it's like, disappears. Who is he?
Yeah.
Like, which Sam Burns is going to show up at this Ryder Cup? And that could actually be a pretty big tell. If Sam Burns and Scottie Scheffler both show up to this Ryder Cup, the Euros are going to have a hard time.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want any other bets out there?
I agree with you 100%. No, that's plenty for me after last week.
So just.
I am the only guy that can pick a team that plays terrible, finishes next to last, and I still lose.
Because I'm really good at picking people that are going to lose.
You fed me Jedediah Morgan. You loaded my list with Jedediah Morgan. I woke up and I looked at the leaderboard after the first day. He was leading.
He went down, though. I mean, he was down towards the bottom. But my boy, Siwon Kim, is just the absolute cheat code.
You can't be. He's never going to be Siwon Kim. I mean, man, Siwon Kim actually beat two guys.
Chase Kepka.
James Piatt and Chase Kepka. Yeah. Did you read the article that Chase Kepka said that they were talking about if he's coming back next year? And he goes, the ball's in my court. I have to qualify to come back. Wow. So, you know, our boy Perez fell outside the number. I was so happy about that.
Oh, God. Instagram messages from some of our audience that were like, can you start trashing him again? Because they started sending me pics of him and Phil Mickelson hanging out together on the green. And they're like, apparently they're not that bad of apparently nothing ended up happening. So.
That's why we nicknamed Perez the $3 bill. You know what a $3 bill is? Phony as fuck. That's why we call him $3 bill. And we got you know, next week we get to recap sure this baby, right? We didn't even.
That's where we get the Monday morning baby, quarterback, and then or we get to Tuesday morning quarterback this shit.
Whew. We get to Tuesday, and we are specialists at quarterbacking.
My God, it feels so good when we do, too.
That's for sure. We are two geniuses. Just ask us. We'll tell you how much we know. And, you know, and then we're back in action. The PGA Tour is back in action for the Sanderson Farms Championship. I'm back to work. The
Corn Ferry, bud.
Yes. How old am I? The Corn Ferry Tour has their last 75 guys. They have their championship coming up. So we got the Alfred Dunhill. There's five or six, you know, guys coming from this field, the European Tour field, that are playing in the Alfred Dunhill. That is the, for people that don't know, that's the Pebble, the AT&T European Tour, AT&T version. And, you know, the breaking news today was Johan, who runs that tournament, Dunhill, who is the big sponsor, he kind of decides they give out 20 picks, and he gave the following guys picks: Taylor Gooch, Louis Oosthuizen, Peter Uihlein, and Hudson Swafford. So four live guys who rescinded, who were never DP World Tour members and or rescinded and did everything properly. Sergio, pay attention, properly. They're playing in the event. So we got live guys playing in a DP Tour World event.
And do you love that? Do you hate
Peter
that?
Peter Uihlein, because he played it. I don't really think twice about it, to tell you the reason. I'm neutral because Louis was neutral on his going over to live, right? He wasn't a big mouth about anything. He didn't.
Louis is not a big mouth, anyways. He's just, I mean, he is basically Switzerland. He just cruises.
Yeah. Hudson Swafford, you know, is one of the coolest guys around. He can't crack 80 right now to save his life, basically, in a nutshell. I feel like Peter Uihlein had his run. He's kind of degressing, but he was a staple on the European Tour for a long, long time, you know, and, you know, Taylor Gooch obviously isn't playing super fantastic right now, even though he's won twice on the live. So he's, you know, Taylor's quite obviously, he's, you know, reality setting in that he's not going to be playing in any more majors. So he's got to chase to this chance of getting some world ranking points, you know. So we got that tournament going on. So we got plenty.
But Bobby, one last thing before we sign off here.
Yeah.
Did you see your boy Lance Bennett tagged you in a comment around Live Golf? So it was our clip about the 5-week hiatus of Live Golf and how there's no other sports.
Oh, he did.
So I just want to give you a chance to respond.
Lance, are you listening? Because you're going to listen to me next week for 7 nights because we're staying together next week. And he said Formula 1 breaks
for
4 weeks, right?
Lance, you got to do math, Lance.
Why didn't you hit him back?
Because I wanted you to have a moment to where you could have the floor.
I can't have any tension. He's not easy to stay with, and I'm not easy to stay with. I can't have any tension swinging in the next week. I'm going to play like I didn't see it, because I'm going to bet you $1 right now that within the first 30 minutes of me checking in that room, he's going to go, oh, you didn't respond to me? Well, what are you talking about, dude? Oh, you know, F1 is what breaks for 4 weeks. That's
only 4 weeks.
Like, shut up.
It's not 5 weeks.
Yeah, it's
5 weeks. The only sport world that has broke for 5 weeks in the middle of the season. F1 came close. You were close, Lance. Hell of a fact that he threw in there, though. Yeah, appreciate
you. Good call, answer.
This wraps up our Ryder Cup show, everybody. Bobby, you hang on for me because, as usual. Yep. But everybody else, we are signing off. And go USA, even though I have the Euros in our penny bets. But I'm also up 17,000 pennies on Bobby. I feel bad.
Never.
Thank you for tuning in to season 2 of the Pull Hook Golf Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe and go to www.pullhookgolf.com for more information.